This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
But you don't pay attention to little details like that, do you, Steve? They use a double.
I missed the details. I feel really bad about that. So my apologies to Showtime and to you, Kyle.
Mother and father are having a little dispute. Excuse us. But welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It is Monday. It is good to be back. Even though we only missed one day this week, we had a rather difficult but necessary, I think, conversation on Saturday. I think all in all, it went well. Surprisingly, in a video that I thought would be kind of harshly received a little bit by a certain... This is further proof of Steve's theory that the algorithm is after us, because every single one of our videos up until this point is demonetized at some point. Now, most of them come back to the monetized level, but so far, this one, which was probably our harshest rebuke of an entity, has stayed monetized and only three dislikes. So something is gone. Something's going on.
I don't get it. I really don't. As a matter of fact, there's still one video. I'm not going to say which one. As far as my knowledge, that has no dislikes on it. And that's video that you would expect to be a crap ton of dislikes, and yet none. So,
yeah, maybe we should start doing the shows that we kind of go, oh no, that wouldn't go well at all. Might be a thing. Anyway, we are joined by one of your favorites, one of our favorites, one of everybody's favorites. She has quickly charmed us with her lovely hats and her quick wit, and I think she's going to do it again tonight. But welcome back, Dr. Griffith. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you guys.
I believe 50 years ago, tomorrow in 1968, a big event happened, and here to guide us through that and why it's important and why we should always remember is Dr. Griffith, and it's all over to you.
Good evening, everybody. I know that tomorrow, if you're watching the news, you get feeds on Facebook, or actually most of you are too cool to use Facebook. I realize that. You're probably going to see lots of images of tanks and soldiers and hear about those poor people in Czechoslovakia and what happened to them. But really, what happened on August 21st, 1968, in the country of Czechoslovakia, was a result of what had happened the previous 9 or 8 months. Czechoslovakia, before January of 1968, had been in a severe economic malaise. They were having quite a few problems as far as the leadership was kind of neo-Stalinist. The media was entirely under state control. There was state-sponsored censorship. But there was a little bit of a thaw, a little bit of an opening, and we see between about 1960 and 1968, the artistic community starting to open up, starting to blossom. Between 1960 and 1968, the tiny country of Czechoslovakia won not one, but two Academy Awards for Best Foreign Picture. Oh, gee, it was Miloš Forman's The Policeman, Fireman's Ball, I believe, or Love of Blondes. I'm sorry, I should have looked this one up. But the other one was Closely Watched Trains. This was a huge accomplishment for a little tiny country. And so if we can have the next slide, Dave. So my hat tonight,
yes,
will be dedicated to the Czech New Wave and the great female director, a woman by the name of Věra Chytlová. Her great film was named Sedmi krásky, or Daisies. It was made in 1966. It is an absolutely brilliant film. If you want to watch what avant-garde was like in the 1960s, it's crazy. The director is experimenting with all sorts of themes, sex from a feminist or female point of view. It's not so much feminist, including a lot of incredible heteroerotic, homoerotic, and artistic pieces. You're probably going to sit there and say, what am I watching? And that's probably the best way to watch the film. Don't give up on it, because the end of the film has one of the truly great food fights ever put down on film. So definitely.
Okay, so you've got, you're telling me that it's got homoerotic scenes, food fights.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's not to love? Why are people not banging down the doors to watch this right now? It sounds like a good time.
It is a good time. It's so avant-garde, though, so weird that people kind of look at it and go, A lot of films at that time were like that. So definitely it's worth checking out. It's one of the more approachable ones. If you want a little bit more of a narrative storyline, go for Closely Watched Trains by the director Jiří Menzel. Really fun, interesting film. But this kind of opening is what we're going to see in January of 1968. If we can have the next slide, please, David. Because of the economic problems, because of what's going on, the Czechoslovak Communist Party goes to Brezhnev, and they get permission from Brezhnev, the party secretary of the Soviet Union, to change the leadership from 1954 until 53 until 1968. The same guy had been both party secretary and president of Czechoslovakia, a fellow by the name of Antonín Novotný. And he is a neo-Stalinist. And he does not like any of this opening up. The reform movement comes with the choice of Alexander Dubček, a Slovak, who becomes party secretary on January 5th, 1968. And this is a very unusual change, because it's one of the few times in one of these communist countries that the leadership passes hands peacefully, or doesn't mean somebody dies. So this is a big change. Dubček was probably picked because he was the head of the Slovak Communist Party. He spoke fluent Russian. His father had been a very early Bolshevik supporter. and he had lived in Russia. So he and Brezhnev could speak fluently with each other, which most of the Czech leadership could not. The Czech and Slovak leadership could not speak Russian or spoke it very poorly. And that makes a difference in these kind of political theaters. So with the change of leadership, Dubček starts bringing in reformers, starts creating what's known as the Prague Spring. Now, if you search the Prague Spring, go on Wiki, you're going to find that it's a musical festival that's held in Prague every May. And it's been that way for about 100 years. Because what happens in Czechoslovakia in 1968 happens in the spring, because it happens mainly in Prague, the name Prague Spring for this whole reform movement sticks. There have been a lot of scholars who have tried to say, no, no, it was the whole country. It was all of Czechoslovakia. Let's call it the Czechoslovak Spring. Historians like Gordon Skilling, the guy who writes the big book, mine's a little worn, on the Prague Spring. The former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, who wrote her dissertation on the print media during the Prague Spring, she insisted you had to call it the Czechoslovak Spring, but it never sticks. So we're stuck with the name Czechoslovak Spring. So if I can have the next slide, please. So Dubček's a completely different cat. He's a young man. He's very popular. He's very likable. You know, he's not holding himself back from the rest of the people. He's right in there with the people. And he called his movement socialism with a human face. You'll hear that term bandied about. Dubček truly believes that the Czechoslovaks should be the ones leading the way towards communism. After all, as he points out, Marx said communism would happen in highly technical countries, of which Czechoslovakia was one of the truly high-tech companies at this time. So he's looking to change Czechoslovakia, to turn it into a different sort of country. He's talking about changing the constitution to allow for the end of state censorship of media. He's talking about allowing investigations into the state's abuse of power. And he's talking about more market-based economic reforms to try to fix the economy. He's also talking about federalism. He's suggesting let's institute federalism so that Slovakia and the Czech Republic are on even footing, because power-wise they were not. That was one thing that the Slovaks were very angry about. Novotny was not nice to the Slovaks. And Dubček talked about allowing opposition parties into the mix. And remember, the power in the Soviet Union and the satellites during the Cold War was in the parties, not in the government. However, if I can have the next slide, Dave. I put this one in there for you, Kyle. Dubček and the reformers insisted Czechoslovakia would remain part of the Warsaw Pact and keep Communist Party rule. So this was a very difficult road to hoe, as it's said. By the way, the men kissing, this was a Russian tradition that was Brezhnev's kind of favorite thing to do. We have pictures of him kissing all of the different Soviet leaders, but it was a sign of affection, a sign of respect, but also a sign that you're mine, sort of thing. Dubček, in his autobiography, said he was totally creeped out by the tradition, but it's kind of like You don't tell the party secretary, no, 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 thank you, I won't kiss you on the mouth.
I've got to ask. I'm sure I'm going to regret this because you already said you're talking about a lip lock, because this is like not just like an Italian cheek to cheek thing. This is like on the lips.
No, lip lock.
Lip lock. That seals the deal.
Don't ask me about tongues. I don't know. I don't know about tongues. Anyway,
hashtag bring it back.
things that I had no idea before. Yeah.
But you will see these pictures, and I've seen various websites that have Putin and Trump in a lip lock, right? And it's like, very interesting. Yeah, Kyle's grimacing. Anyway,
I need bleach for my eyes after that image.
What happens if the diplomat was like, or was a woman or something? Wouldn't that be like inappropriate at that
point? It wouldn't have been for a diplomat. It was only the very highest level of people.
Okay, so, female leader of some kind. Or that he just didn't engage with female leaders, or that was something he only did with men for some reason?
Probably not. I am not an expert on Russian customs, so we would have to find a better expert than me on that. I just wanted to make sure you knew that was part of the deal if you were dealing with the Soviet Union and dealing with Brezhnev. Anyway, so what happens actually is that in the first couple of weeks of January, the state control of the media is kept, but the censors are told, don't do your job. Every television station, every radio station, every newspaper had political entities that were there to censor them, that they were paid by the government, and their word was absolute law. And in the first part of January, Dubček says, stop doing your job. So the media has to catch up. They, in fact, keep self-censoring for quite some time. It takes the reformers in the government to start writing op-eds in the newspapers to say it's okay to criticize the government now. You can imagine that. And we see from in the literature from January on, the various reformers are writing op-eds saying we welcome constructive ideas to help Czechoslovakia. So this censorship of the media lessens. The state still has control over it. At this moment in time, there is one television station and one radio station. Now, each of these are then divided up into small regional outfits that still work in the same hierarchy. But it means that if you live in Ostrava or Pilsenia or Košice, there were people doing radio reports from where you are, or a television broadcast might come to your town, that sort of thing. The media was important to bind the people together, especially when it comes to language. Language is all important. When you've got a country where you have, about 9 million Czech speakers, about 3 to 4 million Slovak speakers, and they can generally understand each other, although when they get into fights, they claim they can't, that nobody else speaks that language outside of them. Language is a huge determinant for how these people interact. So, lessening of censorship, and an easing of travel. People are all of a sudden going to go on vacation. And a lot of people do. They get to travel, not just, very controlled sort of way. They get to go throughout Europe. In March of 1968, the Reform government starts holding town halls, which are broadcast on the radio live, and one of them at least is televised. And these things happen in packed halls, and they fill up these halls with many, many more people than this these halls can hold. And it's broadcast on radio, and everyone is listening to this. I read a great article by an editor of a magazine in Great Britain who was 15 in 1968. And he remembers listening to these town halls on the radio because he couldn't get in the hall. So that was a big deal. All of a sudden, all the radio shows become discussion shows. All the television shows are panel shows with experts discussing things or average people discussing things. They get interviews of people on the street saying what they think the government should be. And the government is collecting all this data. And so in April of 1968, they publish the action plan that says these are things we're planning on doing. And they determined that they're going to hold a constitutional convention in September. That's an important time. They're going to change Czechoslovakia's constitution. And the idea is to add things like there will be freedom of expression and freedom of assembly and all of these different ideas. And it is this time when the action plan comes out that we know from the archives that Brezhnev and the leader of the DDR, the East Germany, fellow by the name of Walter Ulbricht, he's screaming to Brezhnev revanchism, that they're going to turn back into Western imperialists. And you've got Gromyka, who's the head of Poland, who's saying there are a bunch of Jews running around Prague trying to turn them out of the socialist camp. And you've got Kadar in Hungary who's saying, look, we tried this in 1956 and it didn't work. Let's cut this shit out. Zhidov in Bulgaria, I'm probably pronouncing his name incorrectly, is kind of saying, well, however, you've got figures like Tito, the dictator in Yugoslavia, is saying, go for it, Prague. We support you all the way. And you've got a brand new leader in Romania, a fellow by the name of Nicolae Ceausescu, who is supporting the Prague Spring. Ceausescu is saying, maybe I can do that in my country, too. So the Soviet Union is looking at all this saying, you know, this is really bad. So by April, we know the army and the KGB are planning invasion. But they're not going to tell the Czechs that, right? So, but the people of Czechoslovakia become interested in what's going on politically for the first time. They're watching television and saying, wow, this is the first time I ever saw my elected representative. They're listening to radio. They're buying tape recorders like crazy and taping the radio so that they can watch television. Because, of course, there's no DVDs, there's no VCRs, there's no TiVo, there's no nothing. So they have to watch the television live, but they tape record the radio so they can listen to that discussion later. It's like the Age of Enlightenment and the salons in France, where everyone's talking, what should we do? It's a very exciting time. And the people who were there say they were very excited. Sure.
What is a tape?
Ah. Oh, dear. And I tried to find one, but I'm moving, so I couldn't find any of my tape. At this moment, the technology is basically transistor radios, black and white television and a single broadcast entity of television in Czechoslovakia. They didn't use satellites. They mainly used microwave, so point of vision, point of sight communications. They could do that with the television. But at home, people recorded on reel-to-reel tape recorders. This is even before audio cassettes. And reel-to-reel tape recorders were super popular in Europe. If you see my other show, I talked a lot about how they recorded music. A lot, but they're going to use those tape recorders even more prominently to record the discussion so that they can listen to it later and have arguments with their friends. So definitely it's a media savvy country, but you have to know exactly what the technology could and couldn't do, or you probably get a little bit confused.
It sounds like a horrible time.
Could I have the next slide, please, Dave?
They didn't have Wi-Fi or iPhone, Kyle. So remember
nope,
that.
Nope.
Stop it.
Nothing.
I'm going to cry.
Yeah. In fact,
it was like medieval.
Very few people, not quite, but very few people had telephones. It was a rarity to have telephones. Most people had access to radios. Many households had more than one radio. And television had not penetrated very far yet. It's coming up. So this action program, this is a copy of it. It was printed in the newspapers. People just pored over this thing, thinking, what do we want to do? Is this what's coming up? Imagine going back to, you know, the founding of our country and the early republic. This is very much like Madison and Hamilton and John Jay, and I think was it Jay or Marshall? I'm not an Americanist, so anyway, arguing the Federalist Papers. What should our Constitution be like? Well, this is happening in the Prague Spring of 1968. So this atmosphere of excitement on how we're going to change our government is tempered. It's tempered because starting in June, the traditional once a year military exercises that all the Warsaw Pact nations participated in started up in June. I believe it was the games that they were participating in were called Operation Shumava, and they decided to hold these games in Czechoslovakia, driving tanks, driving armored vehicles through everywhere in Czechoslovakia, holding these military games, right? It was obvious that they were basically trying to scare the Czechoslovaks. And the Czechoslovaks were saying, yeah, military exercise, who cares? We're going to form a new government. So for the month of June, they were watching tanks going through their country. And then the upper brass of the Soviet Union's military kept finding excuses for not leaving Czechoslovakia, right? They stayed. These exercises were only supposed to be a couple weeks, and they extended them another week and another week and another week. It comes to the point that the legislature, the Czechoslovak legislature, says, please get these tanks out of our country. What they don't specify is how far out of the country. And so all of the Warsaw Pact troops just kind of park their tanks on the border and just sit there. So these guys that you're going to see in a few moments, when they invade Czechoslovakia, they've already been in the field for 2.5 months. They're dirty, They're tired. They want to go home. And it's the harvest coming up, especially in Ukraine. And they need the trucks these soldiers are using for the harvest. I mean, Soviet Union still needs military help to harvest the grain at this point. And so that's kind of determining the planning. The generals are saying we've got guys too long in the field. And the Ministry of Agriculture is saying we need this help back in the Soviet Union. And the politicians outside of Czechoslovakia are saying we've got to do something about it. And Brezhnev has to make the choice. The choice for the invasion, that occupies the literature for many, many, many historians. How did they make that choice? When did they make the choice to invade? So there's a lot of different people who have written on it, so I'm not going to go into that. If you're interested, look some of these books up, because the writing is very, very interesting.
Was it possible they made the choice before they even decided to do these exercises, or was these exercises were a cover for them to invade? Or were they trying to do these warfare exercises? Yeah.
The exercises were reconnaissance.
Okay, so they were part of the plans to invade from the get-go. They were just calling them exercises.
Yes. And of course, okay. Steve, you know, at the
really
end
military
of
military strategy,
exercises.
Actually.
Yeah. And at the end of military exercises, they always invite the heads together, the officer class together, to talk about the results and how to fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guess who they didn't invite to the briefing? The Czechoslovak army.
What was the leader of the time? Dovček? What's his name?
Dubček.
Who was the leader of the time? Dubček.
Oh, yeah. Dubček. He wouldn't. But no, they didn't invite the officer corps of the Czechoslovak army to the briefings after.
So they didn't want to know the military strategy.
No.
No, I mean, that makes sense militarily wise.
Yeah. Yeah. So in many ways, a lot of historians are saying, hey, the Czechoslovaks were being stupid. They should have known this was coming. They should have known Brezhnev was going to do something. He had to do something before September, before they had the constitutional convention. That was his deadline. And the latest information that we can find basically says he does not make up his mind to start the invasion until the day before. So there are hints that Brezhnev sends to Dubček. He gets Kadar, who is the head of Hungary, to go to Dubček and say, hey, remember what happened in 56 when the Soviets occupied Hungary? Well, that could happen again. And Dubček is really depending on his friendship with Brezhnev to prevent what could happen, an invasion.
He got suckered.
Yeah, well, many people have written that Dubček was far too sensitive a person to be a politician or to be a good leader. He depended on his emotions a little bit too much. He depended on the goodness of humankind a little bit too much. The Americans, journalists who were covering the Prague Spring, and there were a lot of reporters that came in to stay in Prague and in Czechoslovakia, and they were writing constant articles back to the New York Times, the Chicago Sun-Times, Washington Post, etc. One of these American journalists called Dubček, Alexander Dubček, he called him Affable Al, your friendly neighborhood communist. Great, great nickname. So the Americans thought that he was kind of a nice guy, and maybe this was going to go through. One of the historians that I've been tweeting back and forth basically said that Dubček thought Brezhnev was bluffing, and Brezhnev was not bluffing.
Now, how do you think his predecessor would have been? Because he got voted in. It was a Democratic Czechoslovakia at the time, right? So he got voted in. He replaced that other guy, I don't know the Russian name.
Yeah.
Novotny.
Yeah. No, so Novotny was not. Novotny would have been elected by a single party. Pardon?
But they got rid of him and they got Dubček.
Right. He loses the party secretaryship to Dubček.
Do you think that if Novotny had been in office?
He kind of curls up and goes away. Novotny curls up and goes away.
We got a little bit of... if Novotny had been in office instead of Dubček at the time, do you think the outcome would have been different? Would he have been a little bit more aware of what was going on in the situation, situational awareness? Or do you think it would have been oblivious just like Dubček?
I don't think there would have been any reforms at all. Everything that I've been talking about happened because of a new reform government. So I'm going to switch gears right now. Dave, can we have the next slide, please?
What are you doing with your hat?
I know, that reminds me of the 70s.
Now. I'm being serious now.
Game time, okay. Game face.
So, midnight of August 20th going into 21st. The invasion is on. Brezhnev calls it in pretty much the day before, because it takes a while to get the whole machinery of this invasion going. So they've got all of these tanks on the border that start moving in. But of course, tanks can only move at about 35 miles an hour. It's late at night. And there's a lot of them. And so you've got a very slow movement. But the capital, Prague, is in the middle of the Czech Republic. It would take hours for the tanks to get there. And this is a bad situation. They would know ahead of time. And the whole idea was to have a handful of insiders who were loyal to the Soviet Union, who would turn off the radio, turn off the television, stop all the printing presses, and pave the way earlier that day so that the paratroopers could come in. They sent planes of paratroopers into Prague. About 9:30 that evening of the 20th, a whole bunch of businessmen from Moscow land at the Ruzynia airport in Prague. And they all get out, and someone notices they all have the same shoes, matching shoes. That should have been a clue. Anyway, but they all kind of congregate in the waiting area and just sit there and read newspapers and wait. They don't even talk to each other. They just sit there and wait, looking at their watches. And then some unscheduled flights start landing, especially one Antonov, very large plane that lands and parks at the end of the runway. And at a signal, no one knows, who gave the signal. All of a sudden, these business guys hanging around the airport, they pull out machine guns and pistols, and they take over the airport. It's close to midnight. There's not a lot of people there. So they get up to the air traffic controllers. They get the manager. They take care of the airport, lock it down, send any other passengers away, no more flights for civilians, and they start ferrying in the troops. And they start bringing in planes by the hundreds, and they're landing every 90 seconds. And then another plane would take off. So they're coming in and they're bringing in heavy equipment. They're bringing in thousands of troops. They're bringing in KGB officers. And this is just going off like clockwork. They had from April to plan this. The planning of bringing these troops in even the American CIA and the American military says it was spectacular in its planning. Except they forgot a couple things. Number one, there was a teletype operator in the airport who had a little teeny tiny closet office, and no one knew he was in there. And so he's watching what's going on in the airport, and he is typing as fast as he can what's happening, what planes are landing, what they've done. And these teletypes are going out to the world because an airport teletype would have been connected to other airport teletypes and to some broadcast entities. So all of a sudden, people are getting these reams of paper pouring out of their teletypes with this story of what's happening at the airport. At about the same time, the radio had not turned off for the night. Television had. They had shut down the station for the night. You know, it's like our old television, when it would 11 o'clock, they play the national anthem and everyone would go to bed. Or 11:30, actually. I'm sorry. Johnny Carson was on.
What?
So television was off, but radio was still on. And they got some of these teletypes and they heard the planes landing. And they started making phone calls and they started checking things out. And they got a hold of the party leadership, which was meeting. Dubček and all the reformers were meeting late at night. It's kind of obvious they thought something might have been going on. But when they get confirmation that the invasion is on, they're completely caught by surprise. And there were a handful of collaborators in this group that had been working with the Soviet embassy, that had gotten jobs from the KGB, go shut this down, go shut that down, this is what you're supposed to do. And in the party meeting, they were supposed to get up and call a point of order and ask for no confidence vote on Dubček. Very parliamentarian. And they get up to make the point of order, and the guy running the meeting says, no, we're going to continue on our business. Sit down. So they don't have a vote of no confidence. Dubček is still in power. And the conspirators realize, holy moly, we've been found out. They know who we are. They know we have been planning this. And they disappear. Some of them go to the Soviet embassy. Some of them lock themselves into their offices and start drinking. One guy gets in his car and goes to his cabin, his dacha, not to be seen for quite some time. But the cat's out of the bag. And the party writes up an important announcement and gets it to the radio station. And they're still on. The radio station starts broadcasting this announcement. It is at this moment that the head of the interior, the guy who's in charge of the radio, he was a collaborator. He goes to the engineers and tells them to turn the transmitters off. This is about 1:30 in the morning. And he does. So everyone who was up listening to the radio at this moment hears the beginning of the statement and then it cuts off, right? But in the large cities, they had a fail-safe system in case of nuclear attack or in case of invasion by the Western imperialists. And that was called wired radio. Big apartment buildings, large cities had wired radio going into each home. And you plugged in your radio and it was a beautiful signal. And it was not based on a transmitter. It came right through the telephone lines. right? Just like cable television used to do. And so those people who had wire radio heard the entire announcement. They get on their phones and they start calling their friends. They open up the windows. It's a summer night. It's warm. And start yelling at people. Taxi drivers have heard this on their radios. They start honking their horns. Everyone's doing everything they possibly can to wake the rest of the country up. And of course, the people who tell the story about calling their friends, that get their friend, called up their friends at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, their friend picks up the phone, and these people say, "You've got to wake up. We're being invaded by the Soviet Union." And of course, every single story, the person being called says, "Are you drunk? Have you been drinking?"
Yeah, I can totally see that happening.
Every single story. So the country has been warned by radio, and the official leadership of the country, and this is important, got the word out that this is an illegal occupation. Had they been able to get rid of Dubček, then they could have just said, "Welcome, brotherly communists. Thank you for saving us from the Western imperialists." Now it looks like an invasion the fraternal forces. Now, what's going to happen? The USSR, Eastern Germany, the DDR, Poland, Hungary, and Bulgaria all send troops. However, if you look at the tanks, if you look at the vehicles, if you look at most of the soldiers' uniforms, you cannot see insignia. They're blacked out.
But they were also members of the Warsaw Pact, right?
Oh, they're all members Bulgaria, of the Warsaw Pact. But there's no flags.
They weren't no flag they were under, no colors.
Correct. Correct. They were in uniform. Sure.
That's against the Geneva Convention now.
What happened with the guy in the closet that did the teletype? What happened with that guy?
I think he eventually snuck out. He didn't get, as far as I know, he didn't get killed or anything like that.
Excellent.
So that's, you know, this is not one of those situations where a hell of a lot of people got killed, but people got killed. So some of the best estimate around 7,000 tanks and armored vehicles and around 250,000 troops. That's an invasion. And they were ready and they were prepared and they just came swarming in. And they all had, you know, their cities where they had to go. And they just start moving in. But everyone in Czechoslovakia is awake. Everyone knows this is an illegal occupation. Can I have the next slide, please, Dave? So come morning, the tanks are moving into place. There's tanks throughout the city of Prague. They're shutting down bridges. They are tearing up the cobblestones of the old city. They're moving through the cities where they hadn't necessarily practiced moving before. And tanks have large, tall antennas and metal treads, right? And many of the tram lines throughout the city had overhead electrical, meaning that have these tanks going in and their antenna, boom, would hit the power lines for the trams. And of course, give a hell of a shock to the tank drivers.
How'd that work out for them?
They assumed not that it was an electrical shock, but they had been shot. So they start popping out of the hatches and firing on buildings, firing at windows. Genius. Shooting at anything that they can. So this is, you know, it's setting off false alarms. But what's going to happen? The most dramatic of what's going to happen is at the radio station. Can I have the next slide, please, Dave? And this is a tale that is a complete reflection of 1945, when the Germans had occupied Czechoslovakia all during World War II, since 1938. And in 1945, around the 1st of May, the word gets to the resistance fighters in Prague that on the west, we've got Patton and his tank corps are in Pilsenia, an hour away from Prague. And on the east, the Soviet Red Army is coming to liberate. They'll be here any minute. And so they get the idea, let's rise up and fight. Actually settle some scores. So they start fighting. Boom, 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 boom. They pull out all their hunting rifles and they start fighting. And the radio station, same building, starts broadcasting, help, you know, we need help, come help us. They're going to try to close down the radio station. And so the people show up, they're heavily armed, they take the old trams, they start building a barricade in front of the radio station, and they try to shoot it out with the Germans, the German occupiers. 35 or 40 people died. This is called the Pražského povstání. This is the Prague uprising, rising. It lasts for 4 or 5 days, in which civilians with their hunting rifles are fighting the Wehrmacht and the SS troops. And the Germans had had no pity or mercy on the Czechs before. They're not going to roll over now. And so approximately 4,000 to 5,000 people die. Civilians, Czech civilians die in this uprising. If you go to Prague, you will see these bronze plaques on the wall, and it will have the dates, and it will have the people's names, talk about the Pražského povstání, and there are always fresh flowers on these plaques. These are people's family members, and this is how they remember them. So that's 1945. Cut to 1968, the same radio station, the same building, and the sons and daughters of these civilians who rose up come to the radio station to stop the occupiers from turning off the radio station. And they start building barricades with buses. So this is a huge, tense moment because the Czechoslovaks of 68 do not have guns. They are unarmed. They are also steeped in a tradition of nonviolent resistance. They've read Gandhi. They've read Martin Luther King Jr. They've watched the American civil rights fights. They want to free their country in a nonviolent way. And this is part of the story. If I could have the next slide, please, Dave.
I don't think that would work over there in Europe, though. That's a different... I mean, when you have Russia coming down on you like that, I mean, that's just a different kind of enemy.
And so you can see with this picture, this is what they're up against. Tanks, and they've got no guns, and they're trying to build blockades of buses. Now, I've got a video. My husband edited it, and he did a nifty job, I think. I will show images that I took of the Czech radio headquarters. It's still there. It's still the same building, showing about what it is like. And then we're going to go show you some images of what happened in 1968. Now, this was the most violent part of the whole invasion. And what you will hear is an actual recording of the radio announcer on air. The radio announcers stayed in the headquarters all night broadcasting at about 4:30 in the morning. Engineers snuck in and turned on the transmitters. And so now everyone's getting the radio signal. And they're, the radio people are repeating the statement from the legal government saying this is an illegal occupation. They are saying, passing along information. They're trying to say, keep people off the road. And the main thing that they're trying to ask people is don't congregate in front of the radio station. We do not want the violence that happened before. So, Dave, if you could play that video for us. The audio sounds crappy, but when you've got tanks and fire and automatic weapons going, it's going to sound crappy. It doesn't sound like it does in the movies. So go ahead and roll the video.
Vážení přátelé, pokud mě ještě slyšíte, prosím vás znovu jménem pracovníků rozhlasu, nedělejte nic, co by vedlo ke zbytečnému krveprolití. Vyčkejte, až se ozve naše legální vláda, ústavní činitelé. Nepomůžeme ničemu v současné situaci tím, že budeme vytvářet barikády, eventuálně další věci dělat, které by vedly ke srážce, která v současné době nemá žádný smysl. Vedla by pouze k obětem, které nikdo nechce, aby padly zbytečně. Prosím tedy znovu, přátelé, uklidněte se, rozejděte se. Nemá to v současné chvíli u nás před rozhlasem žádný smysl. Děkuji vám.
So those are the names of the 15 people who died trying to defend the radio station. The soldiers finally got in. They went through all the corridors, shooting as they went. They didn't kill that many people necessarily in the radio station, because what's happening is that the radio technicians are grabbing equipment, are getting in the vans that they used for location broadcasting, and they're heading out the back door. There's one or two people who are staying while the gunfire is going on and getting the word out. There is a pretty moving piece where they start playing the national anthem. And it's kind of like, well, this is it. This is the end of broadcasting. And then a few moments later, the voice comes back on. He says, okay, we're going to stay here. We're hiding in a closet, and we're going to keep transmitting as long as we possibly can. And this gives the other broadcasters time to set up their own covert radio network. It's not just one guy with a microphone. The entire network is now tied together via microwave, via radio transmitters, via telephone lines, and they are essentially running the country through the radio station.
That's incredible.
And they're handing back information back and forth. Brno will be talking about the situation in Brno, and then they'll say, hey, we're getting some information from Bratislava, what's happening in Bratislava. Bratislava comes on, and they're starting to talk. Well, the occupiers knew that this is going to be a problem. The radio is going to be a problem. They set up their own radio station called Radio Vltava, and it was broadcast out of East Germany. And they couldn't get Czechs or Slovaks to work for it. So they had to get people who, for whom Czech and Slovak is their second or third language, to be the announcers. And the people in Czechoslovakia had a field day with this Radio Vltava. It's like, these guys are idiots. And I'll show you some of the stuff that they did to them. So if I could start going into the next slide, please, Dave.
So they were like the Fox News of Czechoslovakia.
I was just thinking the same thing.
I wouldn't say that. But they were trying very hard to put out propaganda to tell the people of Czechoslovakia that, oh, we're here to help. We're here to help. And the Czechs and Slovaks were having none of it. And it was a butt of jokes for the rest of the time.
Did they have a program called Slovaks and Friends?
I don't know. I don't know. It would be funny. They had a very difficult time broadcasting. So fake news, it's real. Anyway, so yes, there were a handful of Molotov cocktails thrown, set a couple of tanks on fire, and of course the fires at the broadcast entity, but those were not happening more often. More often, what you were finding, if we could have the next slide, please. And this is kind of hard to see, but there's a guy on the back of that tyke with a submachine gun, and he's firing into buildings. That's more of what was happening in the cities. The Czechs lost approximately 137 people. There were 6 or 7 deaths in terms of the occupying troops. Most of that was auto accidents that they got ran over by their own tanks.
How is it that they're going through and doing all of this damage, and there's so many of them like everywhere? But it seems like one death's too many, but for as many people that are there and the amount of carnage that we're looking at, the numbers are relatively low for what you would expect.
Mm-hmm. The Czechoslovaks realized with 250,000 troops, with 7,000 tanks, they didn't stand a chance. Fighting was out. But what they were going to do, well, how do I explain it best? Way back in the 1970s, everybody had a poster on their wall. And it was this mouse. And this mouse was being attacked by an eagle, right? This eagle's coming down on the mouse. And the mouse is, of course, giving the eagle the finger, right? And the title of the poster was "The Last Great Act of Defiance." You know, we might be going down. We're going down. Not so much swinging, but we're going to humiliate you. We are going to humiliate you. And this is what
going
they
down
did.
Flipping.
Could I have the next slide, please? Yes, Kyle?
I just said they're going down flipping.
Yes.
Flipping the bird.
And so you've got the weird situation of citizens jumping on tanks, waving flags. So they're doing some very active protesting by just going to the soldiers themselves. These soldiers had been in the field, as I said, for 2.5 months. They're young. They have been told they're going to be greeted as liberators, and instead they've got people throwing rocks at them and telling them, go home. So if I can have the next slide, please, Dave. I mean, this is the choice that the civilians have. What do you do with this overwhelming this overwhelming firepower? Fighting is not an option. So a lot of different people did a lot of different things. If I could have the next slide, please, Dave. Some of them went out in the streets and started talking to the soldiers. You can see this. I love this shot. The people had learned Russian. All of these satellite states, the young people growing up in the Soviet satellite states, all had to learn Russian. And so they're there talking to the guys on the tanks saying, hey, there are no counter-revolutionaries. There are no imperialists. You're wrong to be here. And the poor Russians are just totally confused. And there's thousands, tens of thousands of people in the street. So that was one technique that they used. Next slide, please. So they're getting in the officer's face, the tank driver's face. They're saying, please, you know, there's no reason to shoot. There's no reason for you to be here. We're a sovereign nation. Next slide, please. I mean, just these dramatic scenes of troops and trying to understand what's going on. They're far more confused than the Czechs and Slovaks. You can see the Czechs and Slovaks are determined. They know what they're doing. It's the poor guys in the uniform going, oh boy. Supposedly there were some suicides by troops. I'm not sure if that's entirely correct. Feeling bad because they had occupied. I'll tell a little bit later what's happening in Russia now about this anniversary. So you've got these guys trying to talk to them. If I could have the next slide, please, Dave. They're also, you know, jumping on tanks, taking pictures, taking films. They're holding up a sign. It's hard to read in this picture. I've got a closer picture of it. That is a street sign that you would see and can still see very frequently in Czechoslovakia, in the Czech Republic. And it basically says no unauthorized entry or unauthorized entry forbidden. So that's a no parking sign. And they're holding it up as if to say, you know, you're unauthorized to occupy us. Next slide, please. They even had their version of the tank man. This is a kind of a sad story. This is an older gentleman who had severe mental problems. That outfit that he's wearing, he went back in his closet and dug out his concentration camp uniform that he wore during World War II. And he got out in front of the tanks and challenged the Soviet soldiers. They did get him out of the way. There was a lot of different protests like this. This one was particularly noteworthy. He would later commit suicide. This is a very tragic person who became totally mentally unhinged because of this invasion. Yeah, may I have the next slide, please? Plenty of people were associating the occupation of 1968 with the German occupation of 1938, and they're accusing the Soviets of being fascists or being Russian or being German. And if you know anything about the Soviet Union and the Red Army, that's about as bad of a comparison as you can make.
That would have been an insult to them, right?
Oh, huge insult. Huge insult. In fact, I've got altering what was going on. People were sending notes to the radio station saying, this group is having a meeting and this group is having a meeting. And the Association of Anti-Fascists were having meetings. Talking about what they're going to do against the Soviet Union. Next slide, please. So we see anti-fascist propaganda all over the place. They have literally painted or chalked swastikas all over the armored vehicles, which is about as nasty a comment as you can get. Those signs in Russian on the back, idite, my Russian is terrible. It says go home in Russian. I can't read it very well. Next slide, please. So you've get people puzzling over photos like this. Is the guy yelling at the Soviet troops, or is that a Nazi salute in order to insult them? So
I think he's yelling at them.
Interesting question. Yeah, but I mean, is he giving them a Nazi salute?
don't think so. Either way.
Are they mutually exclusive?
The facial expression to me is like, stop, you know, what are you doing kind of thing, you know, get at, it's more anger than anything else. Yeah, it could be just like wishing them away.
Yeah. Next slide, please. And then you start seeing bringing up old news in terms of the Soviet army that liberated Czechoslovakia. So they're greeted as liberators in 1945. But here they're shooting children in 1968. This was a particularly odious sort of cartoons. Cartoons are going to make a huge difference in this invasion. So next slide, please. So there are protest movements. This flag had been draped over one of the victims at the radio station. And they will march with it in protest marches. They're going to keep up trying to talk directly. So you've got street activity going, and you've got direct attachment with the invading troops. That's one way. Two ways they're handling it. Next slide, please. We get huge marches. This is in Václavské náměstí. This is the Wenceslas Square. This is a huge center of Prague, and it's all sorts of ceremonial uses. And so they're having huge protest movements there. Could I have the next slide, please? There, idite domoy, go home. They're marching with Dubček's picture. So more of the protest marches. Next slide, please. And then they did some really creative stuff. At 10:15 a.m., one of the groups that was contacting the radio station, this is 10:15 a.m. of the invasion, and said, let's have a strike at noon. Everyone clear the streets at noon. And so this is an hour and 45 minutes before the strike. This is noon, Václavské náměstí. No one was out. So the power of the radio was such that they could call out people onto the streets and within 2 hours clear the streets. And this was totally unnerving for the occupying Soviet army. This is the busiest street in town, and there's no one out, and there was no one out there for minutes.
That's creepy.
As everyone went inside. Yeah. Yeah. They, as if it was a signal, they just all walked off the street, and the soldiers have no idea what's going on because they can't understand the Czech language. Next slide, please. They would have several ways of trying to handle what's going on. They called what was called the 14th Extraordinary Congress. Remember how I said that they had planned to rewrite the Constitution in September? They decided the morning of the invasion, we can't wait until September. We have to write it now, and we have to condemn this occupation. And so they got the word out on the radio, everyone meet at a particular place at 10 a.m. the next day. And it was a factory that was surrounded by other factories. So no one would have noticed lots of people going to work. And so they got all of the elected officials, people who had been elected to represent Czechoslovakia in this Congress in September. They all got there within 24 hours. They snuck in, they put on workers' clothes. A few of them snuck in by using ambulances, and the people who were organizing this said, cut that shit out, because now we're going to have all of the occupiers, all of the army stopping every ambulance, and what if someone bleeds to death while they're searching the ambulance? So they stopped doing that. And so they published the findings of this Congress. They never found the Congress. The Soviet occupiers never did. And they, this Congress, they worked in what were, they considered legal ways to condemn the invasion. Another way that the people were fighting back, a covert way or an illegal way, was destroying streams so that the occupiers couldn't get around. The Prague has these very pretty street signs that are glass, that are lit, and then they have writing on them, and they just went through with hammers and smashed them, or they changed the directions of signs on the roads, or every street. They would go to all the street signs in a city and paint over what the street was and just write in Dubček Street. So it was a whole city of nothing but Dubček streets. So this is kind of wonderful covert work that they're doing, that they're coordinating and doing this. Could I have the next slide, please? Oh, here's a better picture of that no parking sign. It basically says unauthorized entry is forbidden. So he's got CCCP, which would have been the Cyrillic letters for the USSR. So that's CCP, neat.
You know what that
next
means.
Yeah.
Steve.
Next slide. So
yeah, I know huge, what it stands for. I don't think she does.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Inside joke.
Yeah. Right. And so cartoons start going up everywhere. People drawing pictures, people making fun of the invaders, or they're putting up signs to encourage people, or putting up documents that say, this is what we should do, this is what we shouldn't do. And they're just going all over the city. So I have a collection of some of these cartoons. Next slide, please. This is suggestions on what to do in case of occupation. The top right is, of course, a tank, and it says in Cyrillic, "Eto vaše naše dielo." This is a takeoff on something that Brezhnev said: "Go ahead and fix your situation." This is what led to the Prague Spring, the original beginning of it. And so they're making fun of this, but it's saying ideas that you can do, things that you can do. And they worked up a list of the 10 commandments of the occupied people and published this. So the 10 commandments, number one, don't know. Number two, don't care. Number three, don't tell. Number four, don't have. Number five, don't know how to. Number six, don't give. Number seven, can't do. Number eight, don't sell. Number nine, don't show. And number 10, do nothing. So the
sounds like my autobiography.
Yep, 10 commandments of how to behave when you're occupied. In fact, could I have the next slide, please? And some people did nothing. Some people carried on with their lives as if nothing was happening, completely and totally ignoring the occupiers. Next slide. In this one, this is the CHEDOK, which is the official state travel bureau. Anyone who traveled went to CHEDOK, and that was their official travel agency, and they got you tickets and this and that. But there's a sign up now, the far left slide, that basically says you don't take a tank on vacation. So they're making fun of the invasion. Next slide, please. The watchwords for this occupation between the people and the organizers and the government, Yasme Svami, which means we are with you, be with us. And so this was an important sort of just kind of a symbolic statement that they would make. And this cartoon, it's got the soldier in the tank saying, who will, and this guy is helpfully showing him, to die wenn, it's over, this is, it's the lines pointing to Moscow, Warsaw, Sofia, and Berlin, the cities where the occupiers came from, basically saying, go back home. Next slide. The one on screen right says, we don't want to be a new protectorate. Czechoslovakia was called the Protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia by the Germans. So here again, another reference to the German occupation of World War II. And the other one has got these three men were the three collaborators who were working with the KGB. And they're dragging the country back to Moscow. So the collaborators were identified early on, and every time they got into a car, the license plate number of the car would be broadcast. So they couldn't hide. These guys were in a really bad way. They spent most of the time hiding out in the Soviet embassy and not doing the things that they were supposed to be doing. Next slide, please. This is a you know, fat, funny-looking woman who's speaking as Radio Vltava, the propaganda fake news. And what she's saying doesn't really make sense grammatically. But this is the voice of the free illegal broadcaster of Vltava. So, you know, they're making fun of this radio station over and over and over again. Next slide, please. The guy with the blindfold and the film camera, the title is saying, I'm here from TASS, I'm informing the masses. TASS was a major newspaper in the Soviet Union. And of course, he's got a blindfold on. He's not informing the masses. The other one is a statement from Radio Vltava saying, please remember, these soldiers are your brothers, and they're basically here to help out. So please be helpful to them. And of course, all these signs are pointing in the wrong directions. There's a couple of signs that show people's butts, etc. So the Czechoslovaks were very unkind to the Russian soldiers. They saw them as being really quite idiots. And so there's a tale, it's a little bit raunchy, that they told about one of the Russians comes home from occupying Czechoslovakia, and he goes to his wife, and his wife says, Ivan, what did you learn in Czechoslovakia? What new things did you find out? And he says, ah, watch. And he pulls a piece of chalk out of his coat pocket, and he draws a line down the middle of their home. And he says, on this side of the line, we eat, and on this side of the line, we shit.
Oh, wow. That went in a totally different direction.
So yeah, it was they were not kind at all to the. Could I have the next slide, please? And in fact, they're making fun of the soldiers in 1945. There were rumors that the Soviets, Red Army members, took people's watches. Says, give me your watch. And in 1968, the soldiers saying, give me a radio, obviously talking about how much better the Czech and Slovak technology was than the Soviet technology. Next slide. This one's a little bit blue.
I have so many questions.
Of course, This is a obstetrician doing some sort of an exam on his patient, and his patient is saying, "You told me this was not going to be an invasive process."
That's actually pretty good.
Next slide.
Isn't that a little racy for 1968?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, they were, that was a sexual revolution decade, though.
Yeah.
68 was like a peaking of the sexual revolution. So
in Czechoslovakia, though, I know over that's here.
That's actually roughly 10 years before the internet was even thought of.
Yep. Yep. And here you have the next one. I don't think I have to translate this one. This is what you do to occupiers. Next slide, please.
Oh, wow. Well, that is not subtle at all.
Nope, not subtle at all.
Demonetized.
The foreign press would start talking about this as well. So you get political cartoons. This is from England, and it says, for those of you who can't read it, of course, Mr. Dubček, we had to bring in a few stenographers, one or two secretaries, and of course some T-boys. And of course the tanks are all covered up, and it says one typewriter, you know, and everything's labeled as if it's office equipment.
That's clever.
Next slide. Oliver Twist was the big movie that came out that year. So here's Alexander Dubček asking for freedom from, of course, Brezhnev. Brezhnev pops up in all of these cartoons, mainly because he's got such a great face for a cartoon. What? More? Next slide.
He looks like Dracula, I think. I always thought he looked like what Dracula would look like in his 60s.
There's a nice little one. The one gentleman is holding a sign that says the United States is in Vietnam at the request of the Vietnamese people. And of course, the other one is Brezhnev. We are in Czechoslovakia at the request of the Czechoslovak people. Right. So you've got two people in the same situation, two countries comparing the occupation of Czechoslovakia with the occupation of Vietnam. The next one is, of course, Brezhnev, and he's stomping on the flower that says free speech. Next slide. Here's Dubček, and the young lady is Czechoslovak freedom, and it says, and Dubček is saying to Brezhnev, "Don't you think it's time you went home, Mom?"
Now, wasn't Dubček in Moscow during this time? They kidnapped him. They took him to Moscow to be interrogated.
Exactly.
He was out of power at that point, right? Because he was literally in Moscow. Okay, so he was in Moscow, but he still had power in Czechoslovakia.
Completely the opposite. Once the occupation went bad, once everything went south, it was obvious within the first couple of hours that they could not get any Czechs or Slovaks that were in positions of real power to go along with them. And so what Brezhnev does is have most of the party leadership and the reformers kidnapped, take them to Moscow, possibly drug them, possibly a little bit of torture involved. We don't know. Dubček never talked about it. But he was certainly drugged. He was certainly having a nervous breakdown at the time. And eventually what Brezhnev will do is force the reformers and the leadership of Czechoslovakia to sign an agreement. Because Brezhnev basically hints to Dubček, and Dubček now no longer thinks that Brezhnev is bluffing. Brezhnev basically is able to say, "Look, I have troops in my country. We'll start shooting. Do you want your people dead? If not, you will sign this. It's called the Moscow Protocol. And what's happening with the people of Czechoslovakia is that they know their leadership is gone. They're pretty certain they're in Moscow. There's no communication with them. And they respect Dubček. They want him back. So this is, a lot of this is colored by what's going on. Oh, I want to finish up these cartoons. The other one that shows Brezhnev with the gun and he's shooting the allegorical woman that's labeled Czechoslovakia, and he says she might have invaded Russia. Many of the American cartoons are like that. They feature Czechoslovakia as faceless, nameless, helpless, and look at these poor people, they're getting run over. There's a one cartoon, I couldn't find it, of these just little teeny tiny stick figures, and they're getting run over by this huge tank. And so the American press played up the tragedy of this. But the Czechs had a different attitude. Could I have the next slide, please? This is my absolute favorite cartoon. This is a comical tank. You got the tank driver standing up, and he's saying basically Marx's dictum, which it was, appears as the banner on all of the Soviet Union newspapers. Workers of the world, unite. And then he adds, or I'll shoot. So, workers of the world, unite, or I'll shoot. So the Czechs themselves, the Czechs themselves did not see themselves as faceless victims. They made fun of the occupiers. That's how they, one of the ways they fought back. Could I have the next slide, please? And I can't see it, Will. I'm sorry. One of the most important and poignant moments is because there is film footage and television coverage of this occupation. People went out, took pictures, got audio. The television stations went covert. They built covert television stations. And they were getting the images out. The whole world was watching the Soviet Union acting like imperialists because the word got out. This was an illegal occupation. The Czechs and Slovaks did not invite the Russians, the Soviet Union, to come in. And so it was seen by the rest of the world as an illegal occupation. That was so important about getting those telexes out and getting those information out. So this is, sorry about that. This is a cartoon that appeared in a Chicago newspaper a couple of weeks later. A couple of weeks after this, if you recall, is the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, where all of the yippies and the hippies and the protesters came, and you know they were beaten up by the guys in the blue helmets. And it was a lot of violence unexpectedly at this Democratic National Convention. So here you've got the scene is in this cartoon is the Democratic National Convention. You do have guys with guns poking out the window, and there were machine guns pointed at the demonstrators. This is not as exaggerated as people might think it is. And here are a couple of the Chicago policemen taking a break from their busy day of busting the yippie heads and beating up hippies. And the newspaper he's looking at talks about the end of democracy in Czechoslovakia. And the cops are saying, tisk, tisk, those poor people. When the people were protesting the Democratic National Convention, one of the slogans they chanted was, "The whole world is watching." They're referring to the Czechoslovak invasion. They're holding their leadership up and saying, are you going to be like the Soviet Union or not? It wasn't all fun and games. They were being deadly serious about what was going on. So it's overflowing. Now, the actual real important part of the occupation lasted about a week. All of the techniques that the protesters were using had a tendency to unnerve the occupying armies. The leadership of the armies, after about a week, moved the tanks outside of towns, right, to stay in fields, so that they no longer had contact with the Czechs and Slovaks. So they no longer were getting propaganda from the Czechs and Slovaks. The Czechs and Slovaks would print notices up in Cyrillic in Russian saying, why are you here? We're perfectly peaceful. You know, this is an illegal occupation. And then they would stick them in pornographic magazines and leave them around for where the soldiers could find them. These are guys who had been in the field for 2.5 months. They're a little bit horny. And boy, those magazines got passed around a lot. So that's how they got this propaganda in. But
why didn't they just use their phone or a computer?
Yeah. Yeah, that no phone calls home. They had no idea what was going on. And so if I can have the next slide, please. Brezhnev's creepy bit of brilliance, if we can call it that, is that he did not want to kill off the leadership of the reform. That would make him look worse than he already looked. And so consequently, he got the reformers to sign a protocol called the Moscow Protocol that said, we will undo all of our reforms and come back into the fold. The idea that it was okay for the Soviet Union to invade any country that seemed to be straying from the path of true socialism, this became known as the Brezhnev Doctrine. But anyway, he gets all but one of the reformers to sign the paper, and they go back, and they are still in charge. And they have to spend the next few months dismantling all the reforms, taking them all away, telling the people who they promised they would improve the government, sorry, we're going back to the old ways. This is a pretty gutsy move by Brezhnev, and it worked because each side knew that the shooting could begin at any moment. So all of the reforms went away. Censorship came back, roaring back. Eventually, there's going to be a shakeout of the leadership. The reformers start quitting, or they leave, or they lose all their jobs. The technicians and journalists who had built these covert radio stations and television stations, many of them lost their jobs. Many of them were put in jail, tried and put in jail, for what they did, for trying to keep their fellow Czechoslovaks informed. By April of 1969, Dubček is out because there is a riot. The Czechoslovak hockey team played the Soviet Union hockey team for the World Cup. This is ice hockey. And the Czechs beat the Soviets. There is footage of the game on YouTube. Beat them 4-3. And it started a riot in Prague, and the riot spread. And this was the excuse that that the government needed to get rid of Dubček. Now, the Czechoslovaks will say they did not start the violence. They say that a STB, the secret police, a couple of agents had infiltrated, and they started throwing bricks through windows, and it went south from there. So, but that's all the excuse they needed. They replace Dubček with a fellow by the name of Husák, and Husák takes the reins, and he becomes the leader of the Czechoslovak Communist Party until 1987. So a long time. And this process is known as normalization. They take many, many years to turn Czechoslovakia back into a very dull, gray land. So these reforms, this sparkling of art and culture, etc., that's all suppressed. And they try to kind of bury what has happened underneath the carpet. One historian that I respect quite a bit did research on a television series that was very popular in the 1970s in Czechoslovakia. It was a crime drama, and it followed each year, a year in this detective's life. And they do 1968, and the whole part of the series is that they put real life situations into this fictional detective's life. So, wow, how are they going to handle it? They start the television series starts depicting the reformers, especially Dubček, as being gay, as being effeminate, as being eggheads who had these weird ideas, and they were all under the thrall of the Western imperialists. Oh, and by the way, they were all Jews. So you know, trying to sweep this history under the rug. But basically, they try to turn Czechoslovakia back into a good, good, quiet country. So the freedom of the press, the one thing that they got, the freedom of the media, even though it was still under government control, was the big thing that people missed. They loved having these arguments. They loved taking part in politics. Once normalization happens, all that's gone. They disappear into their own private little worlds, and existence in Czechoslovakia becomes, you've got your home, you've got your dacha, you have your garden, you have a handful of very close friends, and then you've got your public life, where you put on the uniform, you wave the flag, you say the right things, you go to work every day, you don't work that hard. Two separate spheres, the private and the public. But it certainly is not the kind of public sphere where they're participating in their own government. And they need that free press to do that. And it's gone. So I'm gonna turn some ideas onto my class, my video class, and ask you some questions. How far will you go for freedom of the press? How much does it mean? I saw the show Saturday or Friday night with Aaron Ra and the guy from the First Amendment Auditor. I'm sorry, I didn't remember his name.
Black Label Cop Watch?
Yeah, Black Label Cop Watch. This guy is you know, is putting himself in danger. But how far will the rest of us go? How important is freedom of the press? Are you willing to set up a barricade in front of a radio station? Are you willing to face occupiers with guns and tanks? There's one case I would be remiss in not mentioning this young man, because he is very much the face that people will remember of the Prague Spring. If I might have the next slide, please. This young man was named Jan Palach. He was a philosophy student at the Charles University. And he and a few of his friends decided that they would protest the imposed censorship, protest the imposed, the new newspapers that only said the government line, etc. He would protest the loss of freedom of expression. And so he, in the middle of Wenceslas Square, Václavské náměstí, the picture of that square that I showed you where all the protests were, he poured a can of gasoline on himself and set himself ablaze. He left a suicide note. Yeah. He left a suicide note. That said, I'm doing this in protest. I have labeled myself torch number one. There will be more. If you recall, in Southeast Asia, there were Buddhist monks who were protesting the Vietnam War by setting themselves on fire. It's a process that officially is known as self-immolation. This is the tradition that Jan Palach is following. A month later, another gentleman, young man, sets himself on fire. Jan Zajic. And a third person sets themselves on fire later. And there might have been more, but they government is so upset by this. Jan Palach took 3 days to die from third degree burns. And they got a tape recorder in, smuggled it into his hospital room, and he made a recording, and he begged people not to do this. And when he died, about 1 million people showed up for his funeral. 1 million people marched with his casket through the street. And the government had to hide. Sure.
Like, I get the desire to want to do something, you know, to that level to get everybody's attention, but it to me just seems like a waste of a really good life that could have, you know, been used fighting it on another way. I mean, that just seems like it's a horrible way to go. Number one, it's a horrible way to go, but number two, you have more fight if you're here. You know what I mean? Like, to just do something like that is, I just can't imagine that.
It totally shocked the Czechs and Slovaks. He is memorialized to this day. There was a very interesting documentary about him that came out a couple years ago called Burning Bush, I think it was called. I don't know the Czech name. He would have been 70 years old this year.
So he was 21 when that happened.
That technically makes him a martyr, right?
Yeah. Now, in Czech history, there was another figure who was burned to death by the Catholic Church, named Jan Hus. He was a reformer. He fought against the problems that he saw that were in the Catholic Church, and he was burned at the stake. So many people think Jan Palach was trying to refer to Jan Hus, as well as the Buddhist priests in South Vietnam. So, yeah.
Awful way to go.
Yeah. And so, and so.
Especially he hung in there for 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah. With their kind of, medicine. And the videotape or the audio of it is available on YouTube for those who can understand Czech. But it's really painful to listen to. These questions of ideology, these questions, and if we could go back to the first slide, please. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm not smart enough to know how to take that up. So we're still arguing about these issues. We're still arguing about freedom of the press. We're still arguing about how we should participate in government. We're still talking about fake news. What's fake news? What's real? What's the truth? These are all questions that were brought up and argued in 1968 as vociferously as they're argued right now. But being kind of a contrarian, and I'm guessing a lot of your audience thinks a particular way. In other words, they're not happy with President Trump. But my question would be, we empathize with the Czechs and Slovaks. We as human beings, we can understand having our sovereignty ripped away and losing rights. Do you think maybe the people who listen to Alex Jones see themselves as the Czechoslovaks, as the reformers? That Trump is Dubček? That Obama is Novotny? That there are collaborators in the deep state and that are trying to take America back to the neo-Stalinist Obama era?
No. I sense conspiracy brewing.
Madness. That's madness. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? These are interesting questions. Flipping the script, taking it and looking at it in different directions. That's kind
you're
of
probably
what
right in the long run. I mean, you I think you're probably right. They feel that they're slighted anyway. I mean, from all angles, the media, George Soros, globalists, the politicians, everything they can hang their hat on to blame, except for probably where it's actually due, they're looking to do that. So you're probably right. They probably do see this as them in this situation. Yeah. Absolutely.
And with good old Alex Jones losing his platforms on YouTube and Twitter.
Yeah, of course, you're crying censorship. Yeah, shutting down the media, shutting down the radio station. Never mind the fact it was an illegal micro station, but it was legal. They didn't have a license.
Yeah. So I wanted to find out, are there any questions from the Super Chat? I know it's kind of a downer story. I would like for everyone to see it in a way that these people fought back as well as they could. The technicians and journalists did something that they were really proud of. Let me if I can read something very quickly. One of the main I didn't bring it down. One of the main radio journalists of the time, a fellow by the name of Jerzy Dietzenbier, he was very active in this, and he was a really a fascinating guy and a really good writer. And he wrote to the people he was talking to, and let me read something of what he wrote. And this is my translation. So if people are familiar with this and think they've got a better translation, forgive me. But he says, our modest broadcasts made under heavy duress as if we were some illegal broadcaster absolutely cannot balance out the repulsiveness to come. He's writing this later. He's talking about normalization. Then he says, however, we want you to remember this moment, to remember the time when your transistor radio caught the word freedom transmitted from Prague, where you lived with us in an atmosphere of tragedy, in a mood of despair, but believed that it may eventually end. Remember, we did not give up. If we can keep our moral strength, soon we will see the moment when the occupier's last tank returns from whence it came. Then he talks about what the radio did and what they were responsible for. The morning radio aired as well as it could be, even though through a 1 kilowatt transmitter in Karlin during the day, but eventually stabilized for several offices with a permanent cast of broadcasters. They broadcast as one, under the banner of Czechoslovakia One, especially news and commentary. Also, another studio hidden near Charles Square was responsible for official news and information. And the third, in Nusle, broadcast news from abroad. In Nusle, there were also foreign broadcasts which informed in many languages, in the languages of 5 Warsaw Pact countries. We also talked to the occupying forces. Radio gradually took functions of the phone, letters, telegrams, and telex, even connections between citizens and business and government. So that's, they were profoundly proud of what they do. There are oral histories out now, mainly in Czech. I refer to many of them in my dissertation, of people who went through it, technicians, talking in detail what they did, having to smuggle parts out. There is a fascinating photographer, a gentleman by the name of Josef Kudelka. He's an artist on his own and was quickly taking pictures as quickly as he could during the invasion. And he found an American who was leaving the country. There had been quite a few Americans visiting. And he just handed the raw, unprocessed film to the American and said, get this out, because he knew no one would search the American's luggage. For 20 years, and this guy took the pictures, had them processed, got some of them to the news media, and then arranged for an agent for all of these photographs, to keep these photographs. Meanwhile, Kudelka, the man who took them, never knew what happened to them. He never saw that they became the most important symbols of the occupation. Now, he has since gotten the negatives back, and he does a touring, a museum touring exhibit that's really quite terrific. But his pictures are stunning, and he's considered one of the really important photographers of the 20th century. The people were extraordinarily proud of what they did, even though some of them went to prison. And I take a lot of heart, being someone who did, I never worked in radio, but I did work in television at a little broadcast PBS station in Northern California. So I know what it's like to put on television, especially on a shoestring. And what these guys did was nothing short of a miracle. And you can look up some of the stuff that they did on YouTube. There's one film, I didn't bring it because it's under copyright, that shows, I don't want to get you guys messed up with that, that shows the studios and what they did. There was a Olympic decathlete that had won the gold medal in was it 58, who was a Czech. He was the biggest sports star in Czechoslovakia at the time. And he was one of the people that they brought into the television station to just sit there and talk to people and just tell them things about, you know, this is how we're going to handle this. We're going to, you know, eventually be a free country. You know, give them a speech that was going to raise their spirits and let people know that there were a lot of support out there for them. And he was interviewed by the New York Times after this was over. He was famous enough that, you know, he could talk to anyone. And he says, he basically says, we lost, but it was a hell of a lot of fun.
That's the way to play the game. I think that's life.
Yep.
You know, that's a good lesson to take from life. Now, I want to say really quick, you have your work cut out for you here in just a second, because we have 13 super chats for you, and you have to choose Woo-hoo! The best one in your opinion to win the MythCon tickets.
Oh, it's not. So it's not.
We're going to let you decide.
Well,
we're going to put it all on your
questions, like the best.
Yeah, what you think is best in your opinion.
Okay, so, hit me.
Go ahead, Steve.
Hit me.
Okay, I'm going to work from top down then, because I already gave him some to do. So, Asandring, $20. Thank you, Asandring. Things I never wanted to know. I'm in that boat, by the way, with you. There are certain things that I probably could have gone the rest of my life without knowing, and how Russian leaders kissed each other. That would be one of them.
Oh, you love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to get over that one anytime soon. Damaged Dolly, $1. Thank you much. Asandring, I can win tickets. Woo! $10. Yes, Asandring. Asandring, $8. Transvestites are at the gate. So that was like the whole Czechoslovakian cartoons is like the original transvestigation stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's what it was. They're all transvestites. I don't know. And by the way, I did have an opportunity to look at that. I want to kill myself, Kyle. That's a real thing. Transvestigation.
Oh, I told you. Listen, one thing I don't like about anymore is the level of crazy that this planet can get, because it can get absolutely bonkers. And we're getting to a level now where, like, I just laugh at it. Like, there was a period where it really frightened me, like the Christians against dinosaurs thing and the virus thing. It scared me. Now I just laugh at these things. There's a post, and
about
I don't
the
know if it's real or not, there's a group on Facebook called Catholics Against Seedless Watermelons.
You'll never convince me Nicole Kidman is a guy. I don't think it's a she, but it's definitely not a guy.
And if she is, I would give serious consideration of going gay. You know? Or whatever.
Just saying.
Okay.
I've got one
that says, haven't looked into this at all. I've ignored the news mostly. Where is this happening? Most of the USA? Well, we can tell that. No, not in the USA. Czechoslovakia. Thank you so much for this hangout. This is from the price of Dr. 3 AMs. That's interesting. Thank you very much, though. It says, thank you so much for this hangout. Could you guys work on an episode on anti-theism? If so, is there a way I could help in its construction? Okay. From Jade Dragon Melly, it says, although this is a sad topic, I want to say that your shows this whole week have been excellent. Thank you very much, and thank you, Dr. Griffith. And the last one I have says, it's for $2 from the Godless Iowan. Worst non-Catholic theists are defending this. I'm not sure what that is in reference to, but thank you, Godless Iowan. All right, Steve?
Yeah. Yep, a couple more. Asandring again. Asandring, a couple super chats this hangout. Thank you, Asandring. He says, it's a conspiracy. $4, $2, I'm excited.
Come on, Steve, say it right. Say it right. It's a conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy. And he's excited, too. So he's excited about it being a conspiracy. We don't judge. Justin James, $5. Donating for GE's beautiful songs always makes me sigh. Oh, that's you know what? That was in the last one. So, sorry. But anyways.
Oh, wait.
Did I give you some other ones?
Okay, that makes sense now.
Oh, that's what you sent me one from. I copied them. Yeah, they're old ones. Oops. I don't think we read them, so they need to get read anyways.
Oh, we're so
I don't think we read them, so at least they finally got read, because I think somebody actually did say something along the lines of they missed a super chat or something. So at least we made sure that we did read the super chats. But actually, so basically, all the ones we got for this video is from a Sandering. So
you win.
One of them was from Dolly, but I'm gonna say Meech, Dr. Griffith. Are you good with the Sandering? Plus, he's a truck driver,
yeah.
So he might be able to go.
I think he's
just because transvestites are at the gate, right?
That's the winning contest of the night for sure.
Is that the winning one? Transvestites are at the gate.
Well, right. I got to say that this was fantastic. This with the slides and the video was fantastic. I mean, that was well done, well put together. I mean, you did an amazing job. You always do an amazing job, but this one was.
Should we maybe note, though, real quick before we end it, that if I'm not mistaken, the Czechoslovakian, in the late 80s, they actually, because of the Velvet Revolution, took back the democracy and then split up into Czech Republic and Slovakia, right?
Exactly. In 89, November of 89,
but they're in two places.
They got rid of the old leadership, and they brought back Alexander Dubček. He was still around, and he became the head of the legislature, and Václav Havel was the president. And they had free elections, but just before the free elections, Dubček was in a car wreck in December of 92, and he died. There's still rumors that it wasn't an accident.
Mm.
Because there was
if it was 1989 how old would he have been?
He was old. Was in his 80s.
Pretty old.
Yeah. Hmm. He was born in 21. So, Yeah. But it's almost as if they turned out the light in 68 and turned it back on in 89. That there was the people.
That was their dark ages.
That was their dark ages. I think they sometimes look at it that way. It is hard to find anyone who can say anything positive about that time. And
yeah, that makes sense.
But definitely.
They also found out that people who were good revolutionaries, people who were very capable of thinking deep philosophical thoughts, like Václav Havel, didn't always make good administrators. He was considered the conscience of the nation. He didn't rule by decree or anything. He was very much, I think we should do this. This is the right thing to do. He's a very interesting guy. I'm sorry I never got a chance to meet him. I did see him in person once. It was during the election where he was elected president. And we went to a rally on Wenceslas Square, that same square. We went to a political rally for him. And he wasn't there. There were other speakers. And then everyone said, let's go to Havel's house and cheer him. So we all marched the 15 blocks or however it was to his house and blocked traffic, 10,000 of us, and yelled, Havel Nahrad, Havel Nahrad, until he came out and waved at us. That's great.
Speaking of interesting stories, do you want to let everybody know real quick before we close out, give people a little preview of what you'll be coming back to talk about?
Well, did we actually agree on what we wanted to talk about?
I thought that honestly,
that
story was idea.
Kind of badass, actually. I'm sorry. Did we want to talk about reconnaissance during the Cold War?
I think so. I think that story that you were telling about the plane dropping that thing off and the jet coming in was pretty badass.
The satellite dropping the thing off. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, let me work something up for October. Oh, October. The missiles of October. Let me work something up on reconnaissance and how both sides did it, because it was very different on both sides.
Excellent. Spy stuff. I love it.
Spy stuff.
Okay. Well, we want to
anyway.
Say, as always, a deep thank you to Dr. Griffith for stopping by here. She always does a fantastic job, and she delivered once again tonight. And I believe, Steve, you have something that you want to say before we dip out?
Yeah, I was just going to say that if you want, after you're done listening to this, head over to Shannon Q's channel. She's having a hangout right now with Paula Gia at the same place, at the same time, at the same location. How often does that happen? So I will be putting a link to all hell could break loose. The internet can't handle that kind of beauty, right? I mean, between Paul and Shannon together, it's like the perfect couple, right? You know what? They should run for, like, the presidency, right? Paul for president.
We're surrounded by them.
You know what? Or she could be the president. He could be the first man. You know what? Even better. Let's do that.
We're surrounded by them. You've got Dr. Griffith and her husband. You've got Digital Hammurabi. Now you've got Paul and Shannon, GE and KC. Steve, we're just going to have to get together and make this thing official so that we're not left out.
Yeah, we're going to be the cutest couple on the internet. That'll make legal. Views. It is legal.
Legal.
Yeah,
now.
It is legal. Sure. Yeah.
Anyway, thanks everybody for the platform.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. This is your second home here. Besides the class, I know the classrooms probably you would consider that your first home. And if I were you, I wouldn't tell anybody this is your second home. You don't want to tell anybody that. That will hurt your. I fear that will. See, when we say that, we can be like, well, we've got people like Dr. Griffith on the show. That boosts our credibility. I feel like if you told people that you're a regular on the show, it might do the opposite for you guys. Because you'll probably get is that show where they do that flat earth stuff?
Yeah, I'm very selective. It might go on my CD. I don't know.
Fair enough. All right, guys. Anyway, we'll see you tomorrow.
Always enjoy it. Always have fun.
We do too. Yeah. A lot.
Take care.
We look forward to having you back soon.
Guys,
we'll see you back here tomorrow.
Das svidaniya.
Lasagna. Lasagna. We'll see you tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern for Mrs. Jones. And there will be an after show following, so get ready for that. Love for that. Love the hat. Now let's hear some O Fortuna in techno remix. As Steve would say, play that sick beat.
Before that, though, I got something for you, Kyle. That's a tape recorder.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, real.
Yeah.
Real to real.
Is that a four track reel to reel?
Yeah, it's a four track.
Nice. Wait, no, it can't be. It's only got two VU meters.
Is that a record player?
I had a month's four track that I think only had two VU meters.
It's two tracks one direction, two tracks the other.
Yeah, okay. two forward, two back. Right, because I had a month's version of this. Yeah,
right.
That's what
you play the tape onto the take up reel, and then you play it back off to the other two.
Mm-hmm.
And the sound quality was awful because you're using so little tape.
Yep.
Unless you're playing it at 15 RPS.
Yes. Right up there.
Are we clear?
Yep. No, we're not clear. I haven't even played the music yet. All right. Good night, everybody.
Play the music.
Non sequitur. Your facts are uncoordinated.